Don Aguilera could start his, if that's what he's going to do. I want to look at something that is very, very difficult. It's not that there's something risque about the conversation or anything of that nature, but it's very difficult to talk about because of the mindset that we live in and we dwell in. So, for example, I'm talking about time this evening, okay? Time in the Olam Haba. I sent some of you a text and let you know. The others that got a text are not here, so I don't know what to say about that. But it's all well and good. Okay, it's a very difficult thing to talk about time and time in relation to specifically the Olam Haba. The general idea is that there is no time there. The difficulty with that statement is that from, let's say, a Christian perspective, there is an idea that time will end or time will cease. So if you have a Bible or you got one on your computer or whatever you have, let's go first to a verse. Let's do this one first. Let's go to Ecclesiastes. Everybody knows Ecclesiastes chapter 3, right? Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 1. To everything there is a zaman, okay? Zaman is generally, a lot of times, we see the word moed, okay? So, for example, you don't have to go there, but in Genesis 2 and 14, he says, no, not 14. Actually, in the wrong chapter, 1 and 14, he says that God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day and the night, and let them be for signs. This is the word ot, O-T in Hebrew, and for seasons. Seasons here is called mo'adim, which means, and for days and for years. Mo'adim fundamentally means an appointed time, okay? But here in, back to Ecclesiastes, he said, in everything there is a season. Generally, I would have looked at this word and thought that this word would be moed, like a divine appointment. But it is the word in Hebrew, zaman, Z-M-A-N, or however you choose to transliterate. So zaman fundamentally means there are appointed hours and appointed times for specific things, more or less. But it is not a decisive hour and minute type of time or appointment, okay? I'll discuss this a little bit more in just a minute, okay? A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plan, a time to pluck up, etc., etc., okay? So there's a time, an appointed time, for all the things that are fundamentally transpiring in the world, okay? Now let's go to the Revelation, chapter 10. And I won't deal with the rest of these verses. I just want to take this verse in for a second because this is where the fundamental idea of of time ending comes from, this verse. Okay, and then we'll try to look at it and dissect it just a little bit, enough for you to see what's happening here. And swear by him that the living that liveth forever and ever, who created heavens, the heavens, actually, heavens plural, and the things that are there, that are, and the earth, and the things that are there, and the sea, and the things which are in it, and there should be no, should be time no longer. Okay, so from this verse, it is generally decided or said that what it's saying is there will be no such thing, no more time, and no more time, etc. Okay, so go ahead.
You're in Revelation 10?
10, verse 6.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the 6. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, now, it may be different in your Bible. I'm reading here only from the King James, only because it's the one that says this. If you look at many different translations, you'll see there are other ways that it is translated, okay? So, for example, I think one of the New American Standard, I think it is, that says, actually, here it says, there'll be no more delay. Okay, and in Greek, this is the word chronos, which fundamentally does not mean time, but it means no more, no more delay or no more waiting. Okay, so now look at this, and the way I'll read it from the King James, and you can see something that happens here, and especially those of you who have, you know, the smattering of Greek, you understand that in the Greek passages, the words are all jumbled up. It looks like, you know, what it's like on the night that they do the lotto. You know, they roll the balls until all the balls are mixed up, etc., okay? And then they pull one out, and whichever one they pull out is whatever. So, in Greek, a fundamental idea here is basically the same thing. They try to order the words in a way that they believe that they should be understood. But that's not necessarily all the case, and it's definitely not the case here. He said that he, for him that lives forever and ever, all of these things, etc., he said, there should be no time no longer. Okay, so what we can do is just take those words out and cut them up with a piece of scissors. And then what you do is you take the words and divide the words, cut them up with scissors, and then put them on the desk and look at them, and you rearrange them so that they make sense. Because it does not make sense when we try to read this sentence like this. It doesn't make good sense. Be time no longer. Okay, now that might have worked in Elizabethan English, but it doesn't work in contemporary English. And should say that there's no longer any time, but we could write in the margin, no time left. Okay, not that time does not exist or continue, but there's no time left, because it has reached a particular point in time, okay? So, for example, you know, you're at work, you punch the clock, you do your shift, and then when you go to the clock, you're waiting for what? When you go to the clock, if you punch the clock, you're waiting for the moment when it is 3:01 or whatever time that you leave. You want to be over by a minute or two so that you didn't leave at 3:29 or whatever and leave a minute early and all of that. So you understand what I'm saying here is that when no more time is available, then you punch the time card and you're gone, okay? So from this verse, 10 and 6, if you were a Christian, you would think that it is telling you that time will not exist any longer. I've not threshed this out 100% in Hebrew just yet, but that will be coming forthcoming, so keep that in mind. Now, we've read over the last couple of classes that there in Isaiah 65, is it 65 or 66? It's 66, I think, that it says there will be a new heavens and a new earth, and that's in 65, starting at verse 17. Okay, so it is saying there's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. This verse is paralleled by the Revelation in chapter 21, where it says, I saw New Jerusalem. Isaiah, Yeshayahu, he talks about Jerusalem as well here. And this is the classic place where it talks about the wolf and the lamb laying down together, or the lion and the lamb, whatever particular species you're concerned about. Okay? Now, the question about time is, how does it relate to the Olam Haba? Okay? Because we generally have the idea and notion that in the Olam Haba, time will not exist any longer. And there's a great difficulty in this idea that there's not going to be time any longer. But when you look at these verses from either Isaiah or from the Revelation, there's a problem. And the problem is that there's a sequence of events. And sequence of events generally relate more or less, and I will put this more or less, to some sort of time. Okay? Now, two things I want to say. Number one is, how do you, as an individual, you, yourself, how do you, let's take work out of the picture for the moment. Okay? You're not working. You don't have a job. And you don't have to punch a time clock, okay? So for you, Sheba throws up her hands, me too. You, when you are not working, some of you may do one way or the other, but you don't set the alarm clock, okay? So you're not getting up at 5:30 every morning, 4:30, whatever time it is that you get up. You're not, you know, getting out the door before, you know, whatever time it is that you have to get out the door to be able to make it to the work in time to punch the clock when you're supposed to punch the clock. Okay? So, for those that are in that work routine, time is a very, very important element. But, now for me, I'm going to tell you how I work. I don't work like that. Okay? When I get up in the morning, yeah, I get up generally about the same time. I do have my alarm set, so I'm not saying that I totally throw time away. I'm just saying that, you know, if I get to work and it's 20 minutes after, I write down 6:30. I don't care if it's 10 minutes till, but by the same vein, I don't care if it's 6:35. You see what I'm saying? Now, I don't by any means try to abuse that system, but you stop and think now for a minute. Just we look at it and we think of the time clock and, you know, hour and minute, and our head in this present world, in this present time, is dialed in to being sure that we do whatever on this exact moment. One of the things that we do, or some of the people do, I do not do this because I'm not the village idiot, I guess. And I can think for myself. So I don't have to go every week to Kabbat.org and see what time the candle lighting is. I'm smart enough to look outside and say, look, it's starting to, you know, dusk is getting here real soon. Okay, it's time to light the candles, okay? And so, when is Havdalah? I'm smart enough to look outside and say, it's dark outside, we can do Havdalah, okay? Now, if you go to Kabbat.org and you put in Paris, Tennessee, or Texas, or wherever you're at, you know, it's going to tell you that at 3:05 or whatever time it is. My sister went to Alaska. She said, "What is the Havdalah, or excuse me, the Shabbat lighting time there?" I said it's 11 p.m. You know, she's like, man, is that a long day? I said, no, it's not a long day because, you know, when Havdalah comes, you know, the next day it's going to be shorter, you know. But you understand. So the thing is that how in the world did they work with, let's just say, candle lighting in the first century? Did somebody stand up on top of the synagogue and blow the shofar and say, okay, time to light your candles? Oh, please, give me a rest. You know, they're smarter than that. But for us today, we think of things so much more with regard to, you know, hour and minute, hour and minute, hour and minute. But in the first century, they didn't have hour and minute. Yeshua didn't look at his Rolex and say, okay, you know, just about time to light the candles, boys. Get the wicks ready for the women or whatever. Okay, and so it's the same thing if we back up just a little bit and we say the thing about a work. Did Yeshua get up, you know, when he was a carpenter? Did he get up and, you know, did he have an alarm? Yeah, they had alarms back then. They still have them on farms today. And that rooster crows, okay. But, you know, who said the rooster's going to crow at 11:05 every day? You know what I'm saying? You don't know when he's going to... He just felt an urge and a scratch in his throat. And he's got to clean his throat. So I might as well do what? I'm going to crow at this time because I can get my throat clean. Okay, so in the first century, we have a better model of time than we have a model of time today. Because, especially here in the West, in the United States, that is, you know, we have this idea of hour and minute, and, you know, everything is governed by, it has to start at this particular time, okay? So when Shabbat comes, you know, and everybody's gathered around, and, you know, they're saying, hi, how you doing, what happened, you know, to you this week, etc., and, you know, we said we're going to start at 6 o'clock or something like that. I don't care what that clock says. It could say, you know, 5:45. Okay, let's go start. Or it can be 6:30. I don't care. You see, the point is not being bound by time in that particular way. So the generality is, did I go to work and give the guy a day's worth of work? I gave him 2 days worth of work. I didn't give him one. I get inside of a machine. And unless there's something that makes me get out to move something or do something, I'm in that machine until I decide to have my lunch. But what I generally eat for lunch is one packet of beef jerky. And sometimes I'll have chips or whatever. And then I have a snack cake and that's it. But I never stop. I go get the stuff out of my truck, out of my lunchbox because it's cool, put it in the machine, and, you know, the beef jerky slides right down a little bit of a slot right there, you know, finger out that, you know, and keep working. And the same thing if you're eating, you know, some chips or whatever, chip here or there, you know, you don't have to stop. And so for me, that's the way I work. I don't stop like that. I go get the stuff, come back, and okay, go to work. But when it comes time to go home, it's the same thing. I look and, you know, generally I try to leave by, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. The job demands is fundamentally how I go by what I do, okay? Having said all of that, one of the things that we need to look at or think about when we start to think about the Olam Haba is, you know, what events are going to happen, etc. And when you're reading here in both Revelation and Isaiah, it's talking about things that are done semi-sequentially, okay? So, you know, if you're going to have dinner, okay, you eat dinner and you get done with dinner and you say, bendigamos, etc. So, every night at 5 o'clock, you know, the clock has to stop so you can have dinner. That is more a contemporary thing than it is a thing from the past. You know, now my beloved has told me that her father worked at a nearby, it was sort of like I don't know, Vajja's job. He works at a lumber yard, and I think he works mostly now with roofing and stuff like that. But so his wife, he lived 5 or 6 minutes, 7 minutes away from home. So every day when he punched the clock at 12 o'clock, he left. 7 minutes later, he was home. His food was on the table. He ate his food, and at 7 minutes before, he traveled back to work. So that's a pretty rigid schedule. But it wasn't the way, and it is not necessarily the way that farmers do it today. You know, the guys around our portion of the woods, they don't get up and say, oh, you know, it's whatever time, and then go. Okay, so that being said, not everyone in the world functions right after that hour and minute clock and look at that wristwatch and see what time it is. Did everybody know, when all we had was analog clocks, if you asked somebody what time it was, they'd say, oh, it's about a quarter after or something like that, you know, about 20 minutes or after. So, you know, when we started getting digital clocks, that all changed. It's 11:39. They do the clock right to the exact minute and 33 seconds. Okay, that's because, you know, we get these sophisticated devices. We think, yeah, this is the way it goes, okay? Now, here's what I want to really try to press in and start to think in relation to the way these things are so that we can start to uncover a little bit of the idea about what the Olam Haba will be like, okay? Number one. Okay, so even if you do, punch the clock, even if you do many of these things, this is not the way you record time. You do not say from, 7:59 or whatever till whatever time you terminate, I did this, okay? So if we put you on, if we put you on the weekend sometime and, you are going to do Torah study, you're not going to necessarily go through the Shacharit or whatever, however your schedule works out. There are, on Jewish websites, there are these things called Zamanim, the same word we talked about a minute ago. And they'll tell you, you have to start by this minute and this minute and this minute and that minute, etc. Okay. Again, that is not absolutely necessary to do that. And God is much bigger than the time clock, so we don't need to try to be so definite or definitive about the exact time that we try to do this or do that. Okay, now, let's just stop and think. Setting the contemporary clock aside for a moment, how do you experience certain events? Okay, let's say you're going to go to somebody's birthday party. Okay, so when you get to the birthday party, put your present on the table, and then, they say, okay, everybody's here, let's have a birthday party. You light the candles on the cake for the person who's having the birthday, and they blow out the candles, and then you start handing out the gifts, and you go through all these processes, and then, when that's all said and done, everybody's tired, they go home. But there's no, they may tell you, hey, get here at about 6 o'clock or whatever. But in Judaism, they say 6 o'clock, get here at 6 o'clock. That means they'll show up about 9 o'clock in the evening. So Jews, especially in Israel, you say 6 o'clock, but that means 9 o'clock, okay? Now, we also use, I have been myself in many churches across the United States and up and down, and I have been in many churches where they are black people, and they say that when you show up, you show up a BPT. And so, if they said 6 o'clock BPT, what does that mean? Well, 6 o'clock BPT means 6 o'clock back black people time. So, black people time means, if you get here at 9 o'clock, you probably get here just about the time things start starting to get going, okay? And so, this is a little bit, I think the black people time got it from the Jews, because that's the way the Jewish people are, you know. And the thing about Jews is when, you know, you show up, if you show up on time, you know, it's an insult. And if you don't leave before it's time to leave, it's an insult. So, that's the Jewish mindset. But, okay, try to understand this. How did you experience this birthday party? Did you say from, you know, 6 o'clock until 7 o'clock, you know, we had this wonderful birthday party, and then you memorized, you know, to the minute, you know, what happened by the minute? Or did you just, you know, when everybody got there and we started to, you know, gather around and said, okay, now it's time. You don't know what time you started to do it, unless you're looking at the Rolex on your wrist. You don't have to say that, oh, from 6:52 till 9:52 we did this. Okay, this is not how you record time. Okay, and this is not how you experience time. You experience time through events, sometimes sequentially, sometimes not. So there are a number of different ways which we experience time. And if you think about it, you know, you think about, you know, well, I was on my way home driving from work that day, and I saw this guy run a red light. You know, what time did the guy run the red light? You don't know. It was a piece of the experience that you had going home. So you didn't record this by, you know, hour and minute. And this is not the way, technically, that we live. We don't live by hour and minute in our personal day-to-day lives. We don't do that. So, you know, what time do you get up on Sunday morning? What time do you, if you got a day off, what time did you get up there? Don't call me at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to be up at 6 o'clock in the morning. But by the same token, you know, if I don't set a clock, you know, there is a clock on the wall, and, you know, the way that I give my time to my employer is not how I give my time to God. So, what I'm saying with that is, yeah, I really would like to sleep till, you know, 9:30 or something like that. But do I? No, I don't. I generally have enough of a conviction, if you will, to try to be up, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, whatever time that it just happens to be. And I know I have work to do, and work to do for God with regards to the things that you people get to read every week. Okay, so there's a commitment to that, but it's not punch the clock. Got to be out of bed at 8:02 or whatever. But, you know, when I go through my experience, let's say on the weekend, let's say Sunday, when I go through my experience, I can tell you that I studied this particular topic from whatever time in the morning till, you know, whatever time in the afternoon. But I don't know the time. I don't know the exact or specific time. But you asked me what I did that day. I was studying, and this was the specific subject I was studying. So recently, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been discussing or reading this thing about time. So that's been my devotion to understanding time, again, also into the Olam Haba, okay? So, point number one for you to know and understand and memorize is that we do not live time minute by minute. We live time more in what we will call experiential time. So, the things that you experienced or the things that you went through on a particular day. Okay, so, you know, very, well, I won't say very few people. Most people, you know, if they're going to write in their diary, this is what I did today, they don't necessarily write that at 5:04 I had dinner and at 9:02 I was in bed. Okay, they don't do that because again, it's because we do not experience time in that way. Now, here in the West, we've come closer to that than probably almost any generation. But, you know, the factories, you know, they blow a whistle and they wanted you to be there by the time you blew the whistle. But, you know, most of the time it is not that way. We do not experience time in that fashion. We experience time more in experiential way, a way that, you know, this I had this experience. Okay, so, you know, if you went to a, years ago, if you went to a revival, you know, there was no start time, there was no ending time. When you went there, and, you know, when you looked up, if everybody else was gone, okay, it must be time to go home. But, you know, for us, Sheba and I can both tell you that, you know, man, you started the church, you didn't know when it did start, or, you know, it didn't really matter when it started, but we were always there. Ahead of schedule, no question. We were always ahead of time, and we were always the last ones to leave. You know, so all of the things that went on in that particular service or event, you know, that was a time. That was a very special time. But if you will remember, for example, the time that you went to the mikvah and you received conversion, you know, you may not remember the exact minute that it happened. Okay? And so you went through this process and you say, you know, I went through conversion, but, you know, I had to be at the mikvah at 6:02. You don't do that. Okay? And the same thing for everything else that transpired on that specific day. I came to Texas. I was there with, you know, most of you there. And, you know, when it came time, I didn't look up and say, oh, here's Adon Avinair. I got to do him by 11:02. Or, and then I got to do so-and-so by 11:06. And it didn't happen that way. Why? Because, you know, there are some things that you share with one another and you feel about things. And so those things are a part of the experience. But you cannot say that, you know, we had this service from this time to this time, and that was the conversion. That's not how you do it. You do it by what happened in that thing, and that's how it pushes memories into your mind. It does not put memory in your mind by thinking about, you know, 5:02 or whatever the thing is that you might be thinking about. You don't do memory that way. Your memory does not work that way. And your experience does not work that way. Your experience says, you know, I had this experience once, and this is what happened. You'll say, well, when did it happen? I don't know, when I was a young man or whatever, you know. But some people can say, you know, I can tell you the exact day that I preached my first sermon. The only reason I know that is because I had it written down in the Bible. But if it hadn't been for being written down in the Bible, I might say, yeah, oh, I remember where it was, and I went up what it went on. But the exact time that I started and the exact time, I know that it was somewhere around 45 minutes. Everybody expected me to be a 10-minute job. I've never been a 10-minute job. Some guy asked me one time, he said, can you come and speak to us for 15 minutes? And I lied to him. I said, yes, I can. It was a lie, but I know it would all work out. Anyway. So, can you see what I'm saying? Time is not experienced by these special, specific units of time. It functions. It clicks 1 second after the other. We know this, but even that is, you know, whatever. You can dissect that if you wish, but that's not the point here. To understand that, you know, Specific units of time are not the way that things happen in the spiritual world. Okay, now here's something that you need to be aware of. Okay, each one of us has what we call a neshama. And I will use this word because it is the more spiritual aspect of our inner man, our spiritual being, however you want to say it. It's difficult to say spiritual being because the level of Ruach is below the level of neshama. Neshama is a higher level. Ruach is above the level of nefesh. Neshama is above the level of Ruach. And so there's something about the neshama that does not record spiritual events in these specific units of time. So if you had a spiritual experience, your neshama captures that thing and it holds on to it, but it doesn't hold on to it saying that it happened at this minute or that minute. Because when we move into the dimension of the spirit, when we move into the spiritual world, time is a different thing. Okay? Now, let's understand something. Time, how can we say this? We might see time as being more accelerated if we looked at spiritual time. And one of the reasons I say this is because there is an idea that if you have an encounter with a Malach, I'm talking about an angel, if you have an encounter with the angel, what is supposed to happen, or what does happen, or what is thought to happen, is that that angel has to shift from one dimension into the next dimension, and he has to slow himself down to, like, you know, slow motion on a replay of a game where somebody made a goal or somebody did an error or whatever. So the Malach slows himself down to the point that he can engage us in this Olam Hazeh. He can engage us on this time. But now, understand this. Some Malachim are only job related, okay? So they have a message to give to you. They bring you the message. That's it. They don't exist any longer. Okay? But there are others, Michael, Gabriel, you read about them in the Bible, and they're what we would say at least eternal or semi-eternal beings, okay? But for them to stop, slow down, whatever, and have an interaction with you is very difficult. This shows up a little bit if you remember the story of Daniel, where the angel Gabriel said, you know, I heard your prayer 3 weeks ago. And the prayer was already answered. And the reason that he says this is because he doesn't exist in natural time. He exists in spiritual time. And in spiritual time, he was ahead of being able to come and give this message to Daniel. Okay, he also says, of course, that there was a contention in the dimension of the Malachim. There were these negative forces that had to be overcome. But all of that is somewhat conjecture. So, understanding that the neshama, when it has a spiritual experience, it is not happening in this minute-by-minute type situation. And it does not record in a minute by minute. Many, many years ago, I had a vision. And when it happened, I happened to be laying in the dirt. We were at an open-air meeting. And I saw a white picket fence. And I was standing at the gate of the fence, and sitting in a gazebo, you know, 100 feet away or whatever, was the master. And he was sitting in the gazebo, and he was beckoning for me to come to the gazebo. Well, I'm petrified. I'm just here to tell you. You know, it wasn't one of these things like, you know, you have it every day, and you're going to talk with Messiah, or you're going to talk with God. You know, some people think that way or act that way, but the thing is, you know, to have an encounter with God and meet God or meet Yeshua face to face, it can be a very, very daunting thing. It was for me. So someone else was there. Sheba knows who this person is. We called her Sister May. Sister May had a very acute awareness of the spiritual world. And so she knew fundamentally what was happening to me. And she said, open the gate and go in. And so, however that worked in the spiritual world, I reached out, opened the gate, and went in. And I went and sat in the gazebo with the master. And the master told me things. He gave me things to drink. He did all these things. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I can be much more elaborate about what went on in that meeting than just what I gave you. But if you ask me the day, the hour, the time, I cannot tell you. I do not know. Why? Was it so important that I remembered exactly the day that it happened or whatever? Maybe if it, you know, is in line with some festival or something like that, maybe it would have been significant to know or whatever. But I don't know that. I did not make a mental note that it happened on such and such a day. But I have this experience, this spiritual experience in my mind. And I actually, in that experience, no matter how you figure it out, no matter how you explain it, whether you say, well, you were just dreaming, or whether you were whatever, I don't care how you do it. You know, that experience happened to me. And I know that my soul, my neshama, went through this process. My body's laying in the dirt. I don't care if the body's in the dirt. The body is not the significant aspect of this particular interaction with the divine. Okay? Now, it's the same way for all of us with things that we experience in spiritual life. Okay? You might have done the chakra read every morning for 6 months, for 5 years, for 10 years, for whatever. But one morning you're in there, you're praying the chakra read, and there's this word that comes out of this prayer, and it jumps up and gets you in the face. And you say, how many times have I read that word? Okay? So we went to one of the local churches here. Recently, Sheba, Dr. Ella Sheba, Adon Tzuria Gebre Gibora, several from our congregation went there. These people wanted to experience Sabbath. It's Friday evening service. So we had some people who've been, you know, they've been aware of Shacharit. They may not 100% practice Shacharit or whatever. But, you know, they knew basically the process. They have a siddur. They did not have the siddur that we're using today, but that is beside the point because they had a siddur, okay? So it happened on that particular night that we read a passage, and we read a way that it is stated in our siddur. So the thing was, the next day, the guy wants to know, this individual wants to know, where is that passage? Well, I said, it's right there. It's in the Bible. And he's like, no, he said, it didn't say it like that. And so I quoted him how it said out of our siddur. He goes, no, he said, that's not the verse. I said, yes, that's the verse. That's the prayer. I said, your siddur does not say it like that. And it was regarding the sounding of the shofar. The idea of the shofar is intimated. It is not there in words and letters, but it's the idea that the shofar has been sounded, okay? So this guy said, I never saw that before. I never understood that before. So You know, while we're having a service, this guy has an experience, and he has a spiritual experience, and it touches him. But he doesn't know what minute it was. He doesn't know what hour it was. He knew he had an experience, and he needed some clarity in this situation so that he could say, yeah, that's what that said, and that touched me right there. Okay? So what I want you to understand is, there is, there are doors, windows, gates that open and close in the spiritual world all the time. Many people are not aware of it. They don't see any doors opening or closing in their life, so they don't understand that those doors open and close. Okay, one case where you can see this happen, although you have to be spiritually minded to see it, is when Abraham's servant brings the bride of Isaac. And it says in Kabbalistic writing that one went in and one came out. And it's at a place called Bier Lech Aroi, the well of the living one who sees. Now, it is so said and so called because you remember, what's her name? Hagar's son. Does everybody remember what she did with that boy when he was about to die? Or I should say, when he did die. She put him under the bush, but the Spirit of God came from a place called Bier Lech Aroi, okay, the well of the living one that sees. And so what happens? He's resurrected from the dead at that particular moment. But this is the same place that Yitzhak, Isaac, was found praying in the field. He wasn't praying in the field. There's no field out there. It's nothing but a bunch of rocks. He wasn't praying in the field. Not like everybody, they had a bunch of wheat there, and he was standing in the middle of all the wheat sheaves, and he's praying to God. It didn't have nothing to do with any of that. He was in the garden. He was in the field. He was in the garden. The garden, what garden? The Garden of Eden. That's where he was at. And he was praying, and his wife saw him in the garden. And that's when she jumped off the camel and she fell down. Why did she fall down? Because she was looking into the spiritual world. And when she saw Isaac was coming out, but Eliezer was going in. He finished his mission. He was done. And so what's he doing? He's going into that realm. But if you could just leave that portal open for a minute and look inside from the outside, or go inside and experience some of what's going on there, there's no time that's happening. So you can go in there and you can talk to Adam. And you can go in there and talk to the last guy that ever lives. Because there's no time there. Not in that sense. But here's the situation. She sees him doing what? He's coming out of the garden. Does that imply or say that there's something to do with time? Yeah, we would say that, yeah. Why? Because it's one step after another coming out of the garden, and the one guy going in, that takes a movement, and movement is sequential, and that's how we, quote, measure time. Okay, so that being said, the Olam Haba is not this thing where, you know, you walk in and then everything is like a piece of glass. It's frozen. You can't move, you can't whatever. Now, they say that on Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, the day that that God gave the Torah, it was the day that the world stood still. The natural world stood still. But God, he's reading 613 commandments. How long does it take to do that? It doesn't take him all that time to do it, but it takes me a little bit of time to hear it. But at the same time, if we talk about this as being the neshama, and the neshama being spiritually aware or able to comprehend and grasp these things, the neshama can go into that divine and it can experience these things. And time like it happens here on this plane does not match that time frame there. So, we'll discuss this more in the next few weeks, but understanding that time is not a minute by minute by minute by minute thing is very important. And stop now, you know, for yourself. Just this week or in the next few days, just kind of stop and think about it for a minute and think about whatever experience it is that you had. If you truthfully, we're talking a little bit here about the Shakari. Whether you do it or not is your thing. You know, that's not my mitzvah, but that doesn't mean I don't say certain prayers and say and do certain things. But at the same time, understand that when you stop and think about it, don't think about, you know, this exact time that I have to do it. Concentrate on the experience. Because you're not there having shacharit just to be saying words. You're there to be experiencing an interaction with the divine. The rule book for understanding this, or the model for understanding this, is Shabbat. Because we say that the minute that the woman lights the candle, that Shabbat starts. Some say the minute that we say Kiddush, etc., okay? But the point being that, you know, Shabbat starts not specifically at whatever the candle lighting time is, but whatever time that you engage and you enter. Chances are most of you, the women that light, are not standing there with the clock in front of their face saying, I have to do this by such and such a time. They're smarter than having to do that. Yeah, they can say, what time is it? Okay, so you tell them it's at 8:05. So if they do it at 8 o'clock, or if they do it at 10 minutes after, or 30 minutes after, whatever, you understand that there's an awareness there that they initiate Shabbat, and it starts when it starts. Now, the other thing to know and understand is that, of course, in antiquity, it was not that way. You did not have to do everything by minute and be on time, you know, check the sundial, blah, blah, blah. Okay? So we should start to understand that in the Olam Haba, there are going to be things that we'll discuss more in the coming weeks, but there are things that happen that don't happen in the way that we understand time, but it is spiritual time, not natural time. One second.